70 years ago, a honeymoon couple vanished on a pioneering river trip through the Grand Canyon in Arizona. Their disappearance sparked one of the biggest searches in the canyon's history and even involved President Calvin Coolidge. Glenn and Bessie Hyde were never found, but speculation about their whereabouts persists. Their story is a favorite around Grand Canyon campfires. Now there's a new book about the mystery and a new assessment of the honeymooners' fate. NPR's Howard Berkus has the second of two reports on the Grand Canyon's most enduring mystery.
Deep down in the Grand Canyon, on sandy beaches by towering cliffs, a conch shell calls river runners to supper. And as night falls, the campfire stories begin. The tale of Glenn and Bessie Hyde is a favorite. He was a 29-year-old farmer from Idaho who sought adventure on whitewater rivers. She was 22 with a bohemian streak. Their honeymoon trip down the Colorado River would set records and bring them fame. The first woman, the fastest trip, and the first through every rapid. The Hydes came close before disappearing. Legends about them now abound, tinged with murder, miraculous escapes, and suspected Glens and Bessies discovered decades later. On this trip, river guide Jerry Ledbetter reads a brief poem Bessie Hyde left behind.
Oh, Mama dear, please come. My dolly must be drowned. When I put her on the creek, she sunk without a sound. Wee Betty's eyes filled with tears. Where could poor Dolly be? Perhaps she turned into a mermaid and drifted out to sea.
The poem was discovered by Ledbetter's husband, former river guide Brad Dimmick, during 2 years of research about the journey. His new book is called Sunk Without a Sound. Dimmick systematically discredits each of the legends as he tries to decipher what happened. He even built a sweep scow and tried to replicate the Hyde's pioneering trip.
A sweep scow is a descendant of the Mississippi River flatboats, and they're basically a big, very crude wooden box. Square-sided, but they looked like nothing more than a mortar box or pick trough. One boatman called it a floating coffin.
Dimmick casually paddles a more conventional boat, a wooden dory, in the lower Grand Canyon near where he figures the Hydes disappeared. He believes the scow and the river are key to the Hydes' fate.
Because we'd heard of all these Idaho sweep boaters and all the things they could do up in Idaho. And the ones I had talked to said, oh yeah, you'll figure it out in a day or two. We never figured it out.
Sweep scows don't have motors or oars like most boats in the Grand Canyon. They have massive rudders at the bow and stern, with 20-foot handles extending to a raised platform at the center of the boat. The scow worked great for Glenn on an Idaho river where the current's fast and steady. The momentum helped him steer. But the Colorado has stretches of calm water, interrupted by roller coaster rapids. There isn't the momentum sweep scows need for control. That even surprised Jerry Ledbetter during the reenactment of the Hyde's trip.
I was kind of in defense of the boat. Why blame the boat? Because they didn't make it. They didn't have life jackets. They didn't know Grand Canyon. It wasn't the boat's fault. Well, yeah, it was. It was definitely the boat's fault. We had to figure that out for ourselves. And we got beat silly. But it generated a huge respect for Glenn and Bessie Hyde for what they did and how far they made it.
The Hydes traveled almost 600 miles on the Green and Colorado rivers through some of the most challenging whitewater on the continent. They struggled to steer and were sometimes thrown to the floor or tossed overboard. Still, they almost made it, battered, soaked, and cold. They were just 46 miles from the mouth of Grand Canyon on November 30th, 1928, according to a cryptic diary found in their boat.
So in all probability, they would have come down here probably mid to late afternoon. Probably very optimistic about the rest of the day's run. And then something happened.
We do something the Hydes couldn't have done. We rowed ashore to scout the next set of rapids, then hiked through a sculpture garden of carved and polished boulders. Dimmick points to whitewater and the rocks that create it.
This is the perfect scout trap right here, a perfect sweepboat trap. Without a motor, without the kind of momentum that you need to maneuver that thing, everything just piles you into the right shore, and the right shore is guarded by these midstream spires of schist and granite that are just diabolical.
The spires rise 4 feet out of the water, like teeth or fangs, just as they did when the Hydes came through, according to hydrological records. But the Hydes had no advance warning. The rapids didn't appear on their map, and the fangs were hidden by a bend in the river.
I've climbed up on that cliff across the river and looked straight down on it. I've been all along the water line, all at the water level that the Hydes have, and I don't see a way through it in a sweep boat. You know, I've been in situations like that. You don't have time to really be scared. You just do what you can, and boom, take your hit. And in this case, there's no trace of them after that point, just one derelict boat.
We try the rapid and fangs ourselves in Dimmock's wooden dory with his oars and shoulders for steering.
If we do plow into those rocks, kind of lean towards it so the boat doesn't...
I'm in the front of the boat, bearing the brunt of crashing waves, but Dimmock's doing all the work, pulling his oars hard, fighting the river, which thrusts us toward the fangs. The Hydes had no control here.
Woo!
We skirt the rocks in a wild but fun ride. The Hydes might have been struggling with their rudders one moment, then swimming cold and terrified the next, the scow continuing downstream.
Well, we're floating into the area now where the scow was found. Everything was aboard. Clothes, their hiking boots, their food, Glenn's gun, the journal. Everything that they would have taken had they left intentionally. No sign of them.
And no sign of damage. This fit Dimmock's experience in his scow. Violent collisions left no discernible marks, perhaps because the scow's soft pine was so heavy and waterlogged, it absorbed the shock. The intact boat, filled with belongings and no bodies, fed speculation that one or both drowned, or one or both survived, tried to climb to safety, and died in the attempt. That part of the story remains a mystery. Back at camp, Jerry Ledbetter reads another brief poem left by Bessie Hyde, which in hindsight seems prophetic.
Broken dreams hurt me so. I sometimes pause to wonder if dreaming really is worthwhile and not a foolish blunder.
And Brad Dimmock reads from a 1928 tribute in the Hydes' hometown newspaper.
Life is not a cut-and-dried proposition. It may be to some few of us who live by rule and rote. There are others who demand the more spectacular, even the dangerous, before their lives can be lived. We of sedentary habits may decry their daring and the risks they take, unnecessary by our standards. But life would be a sorry spectacle if all of humanity were cast in the mold of the commonplace.
The scow was found on Christmas Day, its rope snagged in the Colorado River. The search party had suffered its own mishaps. Cold and wet and anxious to get out of Grand Canyon, the searchers quickly gathered the Hydes' belongings and cut the rope. They watched the scow drift away and lodge in some rocks. It was likely destroyed later in spring floods. Howard Berkus, NPR News.